Rondel Gibbet, a comedy by Peter Terson, with Hayden Jones as Francis and June Barry as his wife.
Ah! The local paper, delivered 20 minutes late again. Never mind. Let's see if they've published my protest. Where? Letters. Livestock prices, no. Agricultural implements, no. District news. What's on in Rondel? Ah, here. Letters to the editor. The bypass. Not again. We get letters about the bypass every week. The church renovation appeal, no thanks. Plans for the carnival week. New housing estate? It isn't in. They haven't published my letter again.
Perhaps it'll be in next week. You might have been too late for this week's edition.
Too late? I wasn't too late. It was on the editor's desk on Monday, and the closing day is Wednesday.
Perhaps he's holding it over.
Holding it over? For what? It should be in now. It was of paramount importance. If the council aren't restrained from persecuting me, there's no knowing where they'll stop.
Just because they haven't replaced the gate yet doesn't mean you're being persecuted. Besides, it might not be of public interest.
Of course it's of public interest. It's the way we're governed. It concerns us all.
The paper doesn't seem to think so.
Collusion. That's what that is. Collusion. The paper never prints my letters. They're afraid to oppose the council, or the police, or the Riparians, or the Round Table, or the Conservative Club and the Allotment Committee. Collusion.
You don't know, Francis.
Don't know? What about my letters concerning the expense of the Lord Mayor's lunch? Or the letter about police harassment outside the Working Men's Club? And the letter about dogs fouling the church grounds? Sacred soil soiled. I headed that. But they didn't print it. I've been ignored. Ignored all along the line. It's repression, this is.
No repression, Francis. You exaggerate.
I don't exaggerate. It's not in my nature to exaggerate. It's repression. I'm a victim of collusion. Otherwise, why should the editor ignore my letters?
Why not ask him?
Ask him? That's not a bad idea you've turned up with for once. I will ask him.
But, Francis, don't upset him.
The Rundle Advertiser and Wessex Chronicle, first established 1854... and been saying the same things ever since. Good morning, Mr. Editor.
Good morning, Mr. Haydock. What a delight to see you in person.
Don't give me that humbug, Mr. Editor. I take it, Mr. Editor, is the correct form of address. I mean, this sheet of yours isn't produced by computer, is it? It does somewhere have the human touch.
Editor will do fine. Now, what can I do for you, Mr. Haydock?
What can you do for me? Well, you can publish my letters to the so-called editor for a start, or failing that, you can explain why you do not publish them.
Mr. Haydock, the editor reserves the right to withhold letters without giving any reason.
Withhold letters that tell the truth, reveal the corruption of this town, disclose the hypocrisy, lies, and humbug.
I can't publish libel and slander, Mr. Haydock.
You won't publish truth if it hurts your ruling class friends and masters.
Letters have to hold appeal and interest to the general public, Mr. Haydock. We're not here to air private grievances. We exist on public appeal.
This paper, this rag, doesn't exist at all. As far as the general public is concerned, you do nothing for the general public.
We happen to have 150 years' experience of bringing news to the public.
Oh, no, you don't have 150 years' experience. You have 1 year's experience 150 times.
If you think you can do better, Mr. Haydock, I suggest you publish your own tract.
My God. For two pins, I would and all. Then you'd read something to lay your ears back.
I'm sure we would.
You've put an idea into my head, Mr. Editor, that you might be sorry for.
I think we can put up with healthy competition.
I might surprise you yet, not to say shock you, shake you to your very foundation.
I think we could bear a rival publication, Mr. Haydock. Now, please excuse me. Good day.
The Rundle Crusader. The Rundle Star. The Rundle Warrior.
What, my dear?
I'm after a title for my newspaper. I want a fighting name to stir them with, to play them with.
What about the sunshine sheet?
No, no!
I want a name that'll slay them.
Do you have to slay them?
Of course I do. This town is rotten to the core. I'm going to oppose the wrongs and corruption. I'm going to pin the guilty with my pen. I'm going to slaughter them. How about the Rundle killer?
Oh, no, Francis, that's not nice at all.
The Rundle hammer. I'll hammer them.
No, no, Francis.
I want to expose them. Skin them alive. Hang them up. The Rundle hangman.
That won't sell, Francis.
The Rundle gibbet. That's it. I'll hang them all on the Rundle gibbet.
What will you write about?
Well, for a start, I'll attack the council for their delay in replacing our gate after their dust cart had knocked it down.
That's not news.
And the need for no parking lines outside our house.
That's not news either.
I write about the hordes of dogs that foul our pavement.
We all know about that. It's not news.
News will grow, woman. Once I get the first edition off the press, news will grow.
The Rundle gibbet. Read all about it. Rundle gibbet.
What's all this then, Francis? This Rundle gibbet.
It's my newspaper. First edition. Can I distribute it in your pub?
Leave a few on the counter, Mush, just so long as I get me complimentary copy.
Certainly, Albert. Here, first issue.
First issue, eh? This'll be worth a bit in Sotheby's in a few years' time. Right, listen to this, folk. Editorial. Hang on.
This is my introductory editorial.
It is a sad fact that the fair town of Rundle has no newspaper.
Of course we have one. We got the Advertiser and Wessex Chronicle.
No, listen. Oh, I realise that we have the Rundle Devisor. But this is so completely lacking in human insight, humour and wisdom, that it is non-existent. Good thinking, Francis. To fill this gap, the Rundle Gibbet has been formed.
You've been born then, Francis?
I have. I am the only man awake among the sleepers, but I'll rouse you all from your somnambulum.
Oh, he's got poem in as well. Hey, listen to this, the Bard of the Rundle Gibbet. Our town. Rundle is a little town which should be going up, but is pulled down. Too much villainy in high places. Too much power to the old facers. Councillors, solicitors, manipulators, and so-called educators are among the worst cases. Dear Rundle by the River Pelt, you could be made utopia. And this is my life's aim, I felt.
That's rather smart. Bye. So you're going to reveal all the wrongs, are you, Francis?
You fellas walk around with your eyes shut. You don't know what's going on around you.
I see some rum things going on from behind this bar, I can tell you.
Precisely. But do you ever see it reported? Ever read about it? When was there last a reporter from the Rundle Devisor in here?
Now you're asking and I'll tell you. It was the last five-a-side football competition on the recreation ground.
I remember that.
The weather was wickedly cold and they came in here from the touchline for a tot.
And yet there is news in here. This is where the people of Rundle make the real news.
I could write a book about it. Well, there's the ladies' darts team for a start. Isn't there, Nora?
Oh, yeah.
What, you are?
You and your ladies' darts team. You could tell a few tales between you, couldn't you?
Oh, we could all.
Could this be a story? Yeah.
Go on, get among them, Francis. They'll sell your newspaper with their yarns.
That's right.
Ladies, will you give an interview to the Rundle Gibbet?
Oh, it's just a cyclostyle sheet.
Modest beginnings. I open in the middle of a printing dispute. Now, as I understand it, you are the ladies' darts team of the Tudor Star.
Yes, we are. And second from the top.
Oh, is there a league?
Oh, yeah. We're very keen on the arrows, as ladies of Rundle.
What pleasure is there in being in the darts team?
Oh, he is a bride.
It gets you out at night.
From the old man.
You meet other girls from other clubs and other villages.
You meet other fellas as well.
You
don't get score on the dartboard.
Nora's had a few doubles in her time.
I remember your treble at the book. The men are always attracted to women who can find their bulls.
Hello, girls.
She's our captain. She middles them and no mistake.
All right, girls, on the mat now.
It depends who I'm on the mat with.
And two whiskey mats, a baby sham and a gin. We have to play a match now. Have you got all you want for your paper, Francis?
But what about your husbands? Don't they object to this darts thing?
There's a golden rule for us ladies' darts. When you're on the mat, you're on your own.
Right. Come on, girls. Middle for diddle.
Right, come on, let's get it.
My God, ladies' darts.
Immorality and immodesty are rampant. I'll gibbet them. Rundle Gibbet, read all about it. Female shoot for ball.
There is in this town a team of feather-flexing arrow throwers who go on a dart-hurling rampage every Monday night. See them, these Amazons of the quiver, in a foul-mouthed bar. Mothers, wives, daughters, aye, even grandmothers. Cigarettes hanging out from their lips, whiskies in their throats, and fire in their loins. Left behind for the evening are their husbands, homes, and loved ones. Forgotten are the wifely virtues and modesty as the thrill of the game sets them on fire, fills them with illicit desire. Middle for diddle is their hunting cry. No man is safe. Nothing in trousers sacred as this team of vixens prowl. I name no names, but their sign is the Tudor Star, and their captain is a name that rhymes appropriately with horror.
Rundle Gibbet, read all about it.
Aye, mister. Did you write this?
I am the editor, yes.
But you wrote it as well.
I am also the sole reporter.
Then you better know him nor his husband.
I didn't mention names.
Nora, the captain of this team. Nora, what rhymes with aura?
I'm perfectly entitled to use my paper for free comment.
And I'm perfectly entitled to use your paper to knock your teeth down your throat.
Oh, this is violence. Help! Stop!
Spit the print out of that, mister.
No!
Doc, you have an appointment?
I have.
With Mr. Coker or Mr. Sheldon?
They're both the same. Dental prospectors making their mountains out of molars.
Which dentist is your appointment with?
Coker.
Mr. Coker can see you now. Come this way. Mr. Haydock for his appointment.
Sit down, Mr. Haydock.
I hate these newfangled hydraulic chairs. They make a man feel so helpless. But they're designed to humiliate.
I assure you, they're very utilitarian.
Bah! Ah!
Let's see what lamppost you've been walking into. Tray, Miss Bailey.
Spit into this glass, Mr. Haydock.
They make you feel absolutely helpless, these reclining chairs, too.
As far as I can tell, you are making all of Rundle feel absolutely helpless with your attacking pen.
Oh, you've heard? Heard about the Rundle gibbet?
Lie still, please.
Yeah.
Yes, I've heard. Probe, Miss Bailey.
Probe, Mr. Coker.
You've got two loose ones here. I think one will have to come out. You really ought to choose your victims with more care, Mr. Haydock.
More care? I'll chip at them all.
And God knows what they'll do to you. Local, Miss Bailey.
Local anaesthetic, Mr. Coker.
That's right. There are people in this town who won't take your attacks lying down, you know. You'll feel a little prick, yeah? Please lie still and listen.
Listen. You're not in control of me, even though I am at your mercy in this damn chair.
I said listen, and listen you must, because you're in no position to answer back. Forceps, Miss Bailey.
Forceps, Mr. Coker.
Now, let us get at this fellow. Whoever loosened it did a good job. But I'll tell you this. There are people in high places who can loosen you up in much more damaging ways, Mr. Haydock. Don't try to reply. That's come out neatly. Swab, Miss Bailey.
Swab, Mr. Coker.
Some will use their fists against you, others their boots. But yet others have more subtle ways of destroying you. You and your Rundle gibbet, Mr. Haydock, so take care. Take care. Mouthwash, Miss Bailey.
Mouthwash, Mr. Coker.
Wash out your mouth, Mr. Haydock. Wash out your mouth. And remember what I told you.
If my newspaper could be accepted by all stratas of Rundle society, I'll have nothing to fear. Would you like a regular copy for your reception room, Mr. Coker?
No, I don't think so, thank you, Mr. Haydock. I don't think it's suitable reading for my clients.
I see. You're safer with your Hampshire magazine and your Homes and Gardens and Church circular. Soothing drivel.
Try another mouthwash, Mr. Haydock, and then see reception. Good morning. Keep a scarf over your mouth. I'm not suggesting a gag.
My God, I'll gibbet 'em. The dentists of Rundle. I'll gibbet 'em. The godlike smoothies and their white-coated, firm-breasted, long-legged nymphet assistants. I'll gibbet 'em all. Read all about it. Randall Gibbet, read all about it. Local dentist draws gold every time he draws teeth. Read all about it. Oral racket revealed in the Randall Gibbet.
Excuse me, sir. Can I ask by what authority you are selling newspapers in a public place?
By the authority of free speech.
Have you a license?
I have a license to tell the truth and reveal the villainies of this town, the license of every honest man.
Are you a registered charity?
I'm a registered beggar. The system of this town has made beggars of us all.
Is that a collecting tin you have there?
This, you will observe, is a dried milk tin with a slit cut in the lid.
And the coins inside, have they been collected?
No, they've dropped from heaven.
I think you better come to the police station with me, sir.
Police station, was it, Francis?
Yes. And now the magistrate's court. I've been nobbled. To use the jargon, you have been summoned to appear.
Francis, the disgrace.
Disgrace? Disgrace, nothing. I'm proud of it. Proud and pleased to have this opportunity to defend my beloved gibbet in a public court. Let them prosecute. I shall defend.
Are you applying for legal aid?
I shall be my own legal aid. I have my brain for my defense against their laws, my wit against their bureaucracy, and my right against their legal twisting.
Mr. Haydock, you've heard the evidence in that you were unlawfully selling a publication without a license. Have you anything to say?
I'd like to say that you're all a set of nincompoops to take evidence like that as anything but evidence of police ineptitude.
That sort of abuse is not going to help you. I understand you're conducting your own defense.
You understand a lot for such a little chap. My defense speaks for itself in that I have done no wrong.
I think we must leave that to the decision of the court.
I wouldn't leave this court to decide whether a hen is right to lay an egg.
Mr. Haydock, you cannot speak to the magistrates like this.
And who are you to keep bouncing up like a pink-nosed dormouse?
I am the clerk of this court, and I might remind you that in this case, ignorance of the law is no excuse.
If ignorance of the law is no excuse, what excuse are they for sitting on the bench?
You may not speak to the magistrates like this.
I know those so-called magistrates. One was a farmer, the other a railway clerk, and the other a housewife. They should never have left the plough, the desk, or the kitchen, respectively.
The bench have listened patiently to the evidence, which was that you were selling a publication without a license. Now, have you anything to say?
I'll say this. Look long and hard at this publication, because, my God, it'll be the scourge of people like you before I'm finished.
You mean this thing?
Yes, I mean that thing. And it is that thing that will make you and all you stand for tremble and fall.
Mr. Haydock, putting aside the apocalyptic qualities of this sheet for a moment, the magistrates are waiting to hear your defense for selling it without a license.
Ah! On this quality of selling, may I beg the worthy magistrates to look at what is said under price?
The Rundle Gibbet price. What it is worth. That's very vague, Mr. Haydock.
Vagueness is no excuse in the eyes of the law, you worship.
But the value, like that of beauty, is in the eyes of the beholder.
Yes. Mr. Haydock, enough of this playing with words. The fact is that you were offering this sheet with one hand and rattling a collecting box in the other.
And what, may I ask, was in the collecting box?
Police evidence clearly stated that in the collecting box were three coins with a value of one penny, a French-Canadian franc, and an Indian rupee.
A grand alliance! Though the British Empire is crumbled, yet shall I weld it together in the Rundle Gibbet.
Enough of this nonsense, Mr. Haydock. We must get on with it. You have been found guilty of proffering an unlicensed product for sale in the High Street without a publisher's or vendor's license. Fined £50, and let's not see you in here again.
My God, I'll chip it to him. I'll gibbet these so-called worships who worship only their own power, and this clerk of the court who courts his own ignorance. Randall Gibbet, read all about it. A bench full of monkeys. The so-called magistrates of this town provide a free service to the public. Every Thursday they assemble their circus and perform their monkey tricks. These clowns have ordained that I shall not be allowed to sell my newspaper. But they forget that Francis Haydock is a fine performer himself, a bit of an acrobat who can leap out of their loop, an escapologist who can wriggle out of their chain. If they forbid me from selling my gibbet, then, dear public, I shall give it away. To meet the expense, I have put some of my worldly goods, to be precise, my family watch and Albert chain, in the hands of our local auctioneers, Faker and Mallet, who estimate a selling price of no less than £60.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's get on briskly. We have some interesting items to keep you on your mettle. Make your bids nice and clear, please. I have eyes like a hawk, but my hammer has a mind of his own.
Get on with it.
Yes, well, without any further delay, then, the next item. Lot 120. A very handsome silver-plated watch, made in Birmingham, key-wind and in good working order, complete with Albert chain and football medal inscribed Chandler's Ford United 1925. Who's going to start me off at £50? Now, come along, we all know its value. Have I got £40, then? Is it 30 to start? Ah, 25 at the back. Come along for this very handsome watch and chain. Who'll give me 30? I'll take ones, then.
I tell you what.
And it's 6, 27, 28, going, gone.
Yeah. Robbery! Hello. Robbery! You said it would fetch £60.
There was no reserve on it, Mr. Haydock. We cannot control the bidding.
Cheats, robbers, twisters. I'll gibbet you for this. Randall Gibbet, read all about it. Antique ring strangles Randall. Poor old Randall is being drained of its antiques and treasures by that firm of so-called auctioneers, Faker and Mallet, Buccaneers. I accuse them of stripping Randall of its treasures at their weekly auction. That smug Faker on his rostrum takes more bids off the walls than off the hall, and those stinking scavengers, the antique dealers of the ring, are in the alliance with him. He is so involved in the ring, he takes his bids in circles. He knocked down a cherished watch of mine, a memento of a man's life, at a third of its value to his cronies in the trade. Don't take your treasure to Faker and Mallet, because what they touch doth turn to dross.
Dear Mr. Haydock, I have been instructed by my clients, Faker and Mallet, that unless you desist from these unwarranted attacks on character and integrity, they shall have to take further actions. Yours, Felix Rafferty, Solicitor.
Felix Rafferty, our local solicitor. So you're sending me letters of warning, are you, Rafferty, Rafferty?
I'm sorry, but I don't discuss business in the street, Mr. Haydock.
Well, I discuss business anywhere, and you can tell your precious clients from me.
I shall tell them nothing from you. I shall only discuss the case through another solicitor.
Oh, our wonderful legal whiz kid cannot even be addressed to his face. Our mighty sun god of twisted justice is too exalted to be stared at with the naked eye, but I'll stare at you, my little legal crook.
You must let me past, Mr. Haydock.
Oh, must I? Always your rules. Well, this time we're playing to my rules.
You're obstructing me. And I have an appointment.
And where is this appointment that gets you running? To the Conservative Club among your fellow crooks? The Rotarians with your rotating circle of manipulators. The magistrate's court with those asses of the law.
Mr. Haydock, let me past. And I warn you, if you go on as you are, you'll end up in very severe trouble.
Severe trouble? Don't you mean severe plotting? There is a plot against me by the so-called powers of this town, but by God, I'll gibbet you all! I'll gibbet you and your legal wranglers. I'll gibbet the menagerie of a town council. I'll reveal the lying and cheating of the Chamber of Commerce. Read all about it. The town council that sells itself to the biggest contractor. I'll gibbet the professional businessman's guild who keep their fees as high as they can to bleed the public dry. I'll gibbet the police who are on the payroll of the local Rotarians and fascists. I'll gibbet the traders who peg their prices sky high.
Francis.
I'll gibbet...
Francis. Aren't you overdoing your attacks? Can't you find something to praise in our town?
Vicar. My vicar, the Reverend Lockie. Don't you realize I'm like Christ? I fight the slothful and the dull. Like you, my task is to open the eyes of the sleepwalkers and show them the living truth.
Yes, that is part of our function, Francis.
Then let us combine forces.
Combine forces? In what way?
You fight from the pulpit. I'll fight from the pen.
I realize we have a common armory, Francis. I cannot quite see them yoked in battle.
Why, we fight together! From your pulpit, you quote my gibbet, and for my part, I will review your sermons in my gibbet. Together, we will blast the sin, evil, and stupidity of this Sodom of a town.
No, Francis. I don't favor that together we fight the good fight. Easier to yoke the cart horse to the thoroughbred than your vitriolic pen to my, how shall I say it, hopeful sermons.
Say half-hearted sermons. Oh, you man of little belief, you whimper of God. Your unsure voice rings in an empty church. If you had my faith and my courage of your convictions, you would pack your pews. I'll gibbet you, pathetic, limp servant of the Lord. Rundle Gibbet, read all about it. Insipid servant of God pulls in his Sunday dozen. This town has 12,000 lost souls, and this fisher of men can't net more than 24 a week. Oh, this flower-tending Mother's Union-propped, mealy-mouthed lackface is not fit to fill his place in the house of a fighting god.
Mr. Haydock, how nice to bump into you.
Dr. Parker! When a doctor bumps into me in the street, my heart beats a bit faster because I'm a suspicious cove.
I assure you, Mr. Haydock, it's a pure coincidence.
You never bump into me through pure coincidence when I'm ill. What's your game?
Now, why don't you settle down, Francis?
Francis, now, is it? My doctor is consulting me in the street since I started my gibbet.
Look, you're getting much too excited, you know. Why don't you drop in? Let me take your blood pressure.
Blood pressure, be damned! So, they've got you at it now, eh, Dr. Parker? Oh, they've tried everything. Police, solicitors, ruffians, and now the medical section, is it?
But all this excitement isn't good for you. I'm concerned about your stability.
Oh, yes, you'd like to put me into a straitjacket, wouldn't you? That's what you'd like. Well, you're not going to do it. I'm not mad. It's only the cunning of this town's prospering robber classes that makes me mad.
Oh, nobody is suggesting any such thing. You're nothing but remarkably sane. But why drive yourself so hard? Take it easy for a while. Rest your attacks on the follies and foibles of the world. Take up a few soothing pastimes, hobbies, interests.
I don't want to be soothed, Doctor. I want to be ruffled, because when I'm ruffled, I'm spiky, and when I'm spiky, I'm dangerous.
And when you're dangerous, your blood pressure goes up. Now think on it. Good day.
Now they've got them all lined up against me. They've even got the medical profession on their side. Right. I'll gibbet him. I'll gibbet the quacky medical service of this town and the doctors who would calm anybody who looks like disclosing the secrets of the power holders. I'll gibbet our so-called doctors.
Gibbet the doctors? Oh, no, you mustn't gibbet the doctors, Francis.
That Parker. I'll gibbet Parker.
Not Dr. Parker, Francis, after he's been so good to me. You said a word against Dr. Parker, I could never look him in the face again. I couldn't let him inspect me any place again.
Would you muzzle me as well, wife?
You know I wouldn't, Francis. I'd always stand by you. But I don't know where my kidneys would be without Dr. Parker. Not to mention my asthmatic condition and varicose veins. Come, take me for a walk, Francis. You've upset me. Take me for a walk like you used to, by the river. I'd like that.
Well, I'll take you for a walk, but don't think you're putting me out to grass. I'll be meditating every step, planning my next edition of the gibbet.
I think you'll always be planning and worrying yourself, Francis. Now, come on, take me by the river.
Look at the town over the river, Francis.
Hmm?
Doesn't it look beautiful?
Beautiful? To me, it's seething with abuse.
If you take it as it is, it's still lovely. I think we've earned a bit of peace and rest at the end of our lives.
Do you want me to retire sweetly, is that it? Become an old plodder walking along the riverbank? Give up the fight? Admire the view without digging behind it, accepting it as a bit of bonny scenery instead of the fancy backcloth it is, covering corruption and wrong? Is that what you want me to do? Become mellow and wear rose-tinted eyes of an old man?
Might be nice. You can't have it nicer than this.
Nice? Is that how you want life? Nice? Hi, what's this? Barbed wire. Barbed wire across our walk.
Here's the man, Francis.
Excuse me, sir. Where do you think you're going?
I don't think I'm going anywhere. I know where I'm going. I'm going along the river walk.
Sorry, sir, but there's no river walk.
There is a river walk. There's always been a river walk.
There is no river walk. We have consulted the Ordnance Survey.
Consulted the Ordnance Survey? Damn your Ordnance Survey. I have consulted tradition. Out of my way, I say. Out of my path.
I must ask you to return, sir.
On whose authority? You jumped up, lackey. On whose authority?
I have the authority, sir, to ask you to return.
Let's go back, Francis, if he has authority.
You would accept his word-of-mouth authority, woman? You may be a liar, a madman, a criminal, a conservative, yet you would accept his authority? Who vested you with this authority? For it's certain you have none of your own work.
I am the water bailiff.
I don't care what you are. I only want to know who put you there.
I'm in the employment of Mr. Selwyn Denning Piggott.
Selwyn Piggott! That magistrate! My God, I'll gibbet him. I'll gibbet our Selwyn Piggott.
We've got to protect the fishing, sir.
All this power and barbed wire to protect the fishing? And who protects the public? I'll tell you who protects the public, my water beetle bailiff. Me, Francis Haydock, is the protector of the public. Come along, wife.
Oh, we could still walk along the bypass.
Sod the bypass, sod the walks. You wanted me to retire from the fight, admire the scenery, listen to the birds from behind barbed wire. Never! I'll gibbet them. I want to get my fingers on the noose around their greedy land-grabbing necks. I'll gibbet them all. Read all about it. Randall Gibbet. Fish before folk. In which town do fish have more right than folk? I'll tell you. In dear old Rundle. Have you tried taking a walk along the River Pelt? Impossible. It resembles the Siegfried Line with its barbed wire, the Berlin Wall with its barricades, the very gates of hell with its trespass warnings. All of this by the authority of our respected magistrate, Mr. Selwyn Denning Piggott. He's determined to stop us walking by the river for fear we disturb his highly bred fish. But by God, I'll walk along the river. On May Day, I'll walk along that old river path, and I won't carry a walking stick. I'll carry wire cutters, and no obstacle shall arrest my progress. Public of Rundle, readers of the gibbet, lovers of liberty and rambling, come and join me!
If you come one step further, sir, I shall have to call the police.
And which side of the barbed wire debate will the police be on? Your private side or my public side?
I warn you to put those wire cutters away.
Warn me? Warn me against barbed wire? I am an enemy of barbed wire. My father died on barbed wire in France, and I surmounted barbed wire in Germany. Do you think I'll be stopped by barbed wire in Hampshire? Barbed wire is tyranny, and I cut through tyranny. Here is the first snip to free Rundle from the curse of barbed wire.
I have witnesses to this. Police?
Yes, bailiff.
This man has trespassed and destroyed property.
Yes, your worships, I trespassed and destroyed property. I trespassed on the soil of England and destroyed the obstacles erected by those who would steal it.
Really, you can't keep causing this sort of nuisance, Mr. Haydock.
Oh, but I can very well, and I will. Barbed wire makes me see red. And when I see red, I go snip, snip, snip.
Then it is the duty of this court to restrain you.
Then try to restrain me. You may as well try to trap the fresh air. Forbid your precious fish to swim. You have tried to enclose everything in this town, but by God, you won't restrain or contain Francis Beverly Haydock. My voice shall rise up. Do with me as you will. You think you've finished me, but I tell you this, I am just starting. I start with this court, which is supposed to deal out justice, but sits on the throne of injustice. I start with the police and town constable who support the landowners, property owners, and professional banditry against the helpless public. I start with the town council who are a bag of monkeys trained only to stick their fingers up their bums and pass apish resolutions. I start with the roguish Rotarians, the two-faced round tablers, and the professional men's guild, the impotent clergy, and the despotic landlords. I'll give it them all. The Women's Institute, the Church Women's Guild, the young farmers, and the views of them all, the old conservatives. I'll give it them. I'll give it them all. By God, though, I'll start and never cease while there's an injustice.
Court, doctor. Send for a doctor. Quick.
Well, Dr. Parker, so they got me down at last, did they?
You're not down, Mr. Haydock, just resting.
How long have I been out?
Oh, a short while.
Don't be finicky with your words, man. How long have I been out?
3 days you've been sedated, Francis.
3 days? All that time silent.
Put it down as a well-deserved rest.
You've been on tranquilizers.
3 days without my voice. And has the town fallen down in that time? Has the land been bought by Arabs, Jews, and Germans? Does the reactionary committee sit in the conservative club? And has the British Legion been burnt to the ground?
Things are much the same as they were.
Then where is the value of my work? Where is the value of my life?
You do us all good, Mr. Haydock. You and your gibbet jolt us out of our complacency, keep us on our toes, make us look to our mettle.
Humbug and platitudes, Doctor, you know I'm done.
Nonsense. Just a little overwrought and confused. Your wife and I have asked a specialist to come to talk to you.
A specialist? In what? In souls? That's what I need. A specialist to soothe my anguished soul.
A psychiatrist, Francis.
Psychiatrist? So I'm nutty at last, am I?
Just to talk to you, Francis.
Oh, I know their talk. It talks you out of glorious madness into drab insanity.
Do you mind him coming?
Send him. Tell him to bring a bucket, for I'll fill it up with tears.
Now, I have only come to talk to you, Mr. Haydock.
A psychiatrist's talk is like a bread poultice. It draws out the pus, it sucks out the poison.
Is that bad?
Aye. If it takes out the blood as well. Are you here to suck blood?
Do you want to lose blood?
They say a psychiatrist never gives a straight answer. He answers a question only with a question. But you can play at that game and I'll put my question to you.
Yes?
Why are they doing it to me?
Who are doing what?
They are darting their arrows at me. They are weakening me with their points so that they can pull me down like a weakened bull.
Who are they?
Well, that's a point. I don't know who they are. They remain invisible, but I know they're there. They send their minions to do their petty destruction on my spirit. Police who harass. Shopkeepers who squeeze. Solicitors who confuse. Vicars who cheat. Doctors who lie.
Yeah?
But behind all, I feel a presence. A brain. A smothering influence compared with whom the others are but puppets.
Has this presence a form?
Yes. It is a mist. A vapor.
A choking, life-denying air.
Has it a shape?
It takes on the shape of a blanket. A great, muffling, enveloping blanket. Sir. A shroud for Francis. A shroud to suffocate his hope, stop his voice, choke his spirit, strangle his faith.
Can you put a name to this influence?
If it had a name, would I be afraid? If it had a title, would I be bowed? If it had a rank, would I bend the knee? No, I would gibbet it.
Gibbet?
But it has robbed the gibbet of its power. It has blunted the sword of its wrath. It has rendered impotent the mighty organs of truth by being invisible. Unknown, yet omnipresent. Where is it? What is it? If it would materialize before me, I wouldn't be going mad. Do you hear? I wouldn't be going mad.
Mrs. Haydock, I think he should be taken away now. He needs observation and attention.
Yes, I've packed his case.
She's put me away. Do you see how it's even got control of her? Even she's on his side. She's been allied to the devil and lost her love and loyalty.
Don't say that, Francis.
She'll sign me away. She'll put me down. Away with me. Away with me. Oh, it's won. The mighty blanket is descending and will smother Francis Bathley Haydock. Now they've put me away. Now they'll be happy. I'm silenced, entombed. Let them do what they will now. The voice of protest is stilled. Weak Rundle. For now you are in their clutches, and I am a wielder of the sword no more. All around me the babble of disturbed minds, my only converse with insanity, my only neighbors, incoherent ramblers.
Mother, don't take me back.
Trust me in the Lord and know that I am Christ.
Barricade the doors. They're all outside. You bees, cockroaches. Send them all at me. Oh, get them out. Out.
Little Jack Horner sat in a corner.
10 fathoms deep. Lock me in a lead-lined coffin.
Steady. Steady.
For, I'm not sucking my thumb. A little Jack Horner.
Show in your claws, tiger.
All haunted. And are they all haunted by their own fancy, tormented only by themselves? Are their ghosts made up of their own imagery? Are they only pestered by their own souls?
Mr. Haydock, Francis.
Call me no names. I am turned to stone. Francis Haydock was a fighter, a live man. I am a block.
There's a visitor for you.
In what garb does he come? In what dress? Is he armed with spears and barbs, pinpricks and arrows? Or is his armory provided by my own mind?
It's your vicar, the Vicar of Rundle.
Ah! The vicar of the house of neglected God. Come in, vicar, to the church of the devil, for this congregation has Satan in their souls.
Good morning, Francis. You're looking well.
No! Platitudes, vicar. I'm looking doped, tranquilized, and well, you know it.
You look very alert.
Alert enough to know my congregation. Listen, vicar. Listen to their prayers and incantations.
2 and 2 are 4.
Locked out. Locked out and under the hedge.
5 o'clock high. Watch out behind you at 5 o'clock high. So deep, so deep. Won't keep afloat.
If I stay awake, no one can surprise me. If I stand on a chair, no one can touch me.
Cock-a-doodle-doo! I'm the cock of the yard. Ha! Cock of the yard!
Steady, boss, and steady. 4, 8.
I'm not sucking.
Show your claws, tiger!
It goes on forever, this litany. Day and night, asleep or awake. On and on.
Poor souls.
Then they are souls.
Tormented souls.
Then answer me this. Who is tormenting them? Who are they accusing? Who are they afraid of? Is it the devil, vicar?
It sounds like the very devil indeed.
If it is the devil in their souls, then this is your place. Not the place of white-coated, syringe-bearing medicals.
Oh, no. These people are best off with trained specialists, not the clergy.
Then if it isn't the devil who confronts them in their dreams and torments, they must be fantasies of their own disordered minds. If so, where is God but in their own minds? Then they need to fight their visions, not drugs.
Each one must be treated as an isolated case.
Listen, Vicar. Say it isn't the devil, nor their own minds. Suppose each one has an enemy that has tormented him into this state. Answer that. If each has been surrounded, pinned down, made mad by an invisible enemy.
Then we would need neither drugs nor God, but detective work. But I'm sure their fantasies are from disordered minds, not devious outside schemes.
Then where does that leave me? Have I swung from my own gibbet? Ever since I started printing my truths, I have been shadowed, muffled by a constant presence. Every alleyway I went down was blocked. Voices mocked down empty corridors. Solid matter barred my every way. I have been driven. Driven ever tighter, ever inwards. And all the time there has been a blanket, a thick, coarse blanket, ready to suffocate me, choke me, smother the life out of me. Who is behind that blanket, Vicar? Who is holding it, bringing it up, move by stealthy move, closer, ready to suffocate me?
You better go now, Vicar.
Oh, yes. Go back to safety. Go back to the light of your Church of God and leave me here to fight the devil's work and be suffocated in the dark.
There is no one in Rundle trying to smother you, Francis.
Of course not. Come along now, Vicar.
Then it must be the devil, because this is no blanket of my weaving. I don't recognize the warp and the weave. The threads are of no material that I know. It smells no smell of mine. No design my eyes have ever seen. No loom of mind ever made such a cloth. Oh, friends, tell me your fancies are real. Tell me your ghosts have been conjured up by your enemies. Give me hope. Give me clues that the disease was spawned by man, not by infested grey matter.
Is there a place through the window?
Two fathoms deep, rock on rock.
If I grip my fist tight, no one can hold my hand. If I curl up in a ball, no one can open me.
I'm not sucking my thumb. I'm little Jack Horner.
Please, miss, he shit his pants. Shitty pants.
Claws, tiger, and rest. But don't relax. Be alert. Ready to pounce, tiger. Every man will use his initiative in the jungle, tiger.
I like your tiger, friend.
Steady, tiger, steady. Friend or foe?
I'm a friend of your tiger, not foe. I like your tiger exceedingly. Where is your tiger from? Is he from Nepal or India or Burma, perhaps?
Oh, no. He's a Rundle tiger.
What's that? A Rundle tiger?
He comes from Rundle, my tiger, do.
And what is your tiger's name?
Cooper. They call him Cooper. Cooper Burns, Lance Corporal Cooper Burns.
He was a soldier.
Oh, he was all sorts. And he won medals.
Where did your tiger win his medals?
On the battlefields. Bang, twing, zip, crack. But they mauled the old tiger in the end.
Who? The enemy?
No, the enemy only shot him, but 'twas Rundle mauled him. Come back a hero, and when the big war started, he was too crippled to go soldiering. So he got in his little boat and sailed over to Dunkirk. Save his soldier pals. Three times he did it. On the third time, they got him. Boom, boom. All the guns to sink the tiger. His body was brought back. The flag in the church towers, aft-mast, muffled drums on parade. An old town gloried in his name and the name of the Burns. And they said that all Burns would be honored
ever bore in the mother town. But at least I'd a fund. The Cooper Burns Fund for his dependents and children ever bore. But we never saw neither penny nor piece of it, mister.
This whole fund, you say? How much was in the fund?
£5,000, mister. And that was a lot of money in them days.
My God, so I was right. It isn't the fantasy enemy from within. It's the real enemy from without that drives men mad. It's the hands who hold the purse strings and the blanket that push a man over the edge. By God, I'll give it him.
Show him your claws, tigers.
Don't worry, old man. Don't worry. Even though the tiger's dead, his claws are still wickedly sharp and will tear aside the veil they put over their faces till I know who holds the blanket. And then, my God, I'll give it him. Nurse, get my bag packed and call a taxi. The hangman is going home.
The Rundle Advertiser and Wessex Chronicle, founded 1854 and still going strong with half-truths and trivia.
Good morning, Mr. Editor. You see, I'm back in the fray.
Good to see you back, Mr. Haydock.
Good to see me back. Humbug, you didn't even report my absence.
We don't, as a rule, comment on personal illness and misfortunes of that sort.
You hoped I was buried in Bedlam. You would have me in a cork-lined cell in the cold bowels of the earth.
I assure you, we're delighted to see you back in the light of day.
You won't be glad when the gibbet is back in the fray to make you tremble and rock your foundations.
The gibbet gave us a refreshing jolt from out of complacency, but it didn't affect our circulation by one copy.
It will do. It will do in the future.
We shall look forward to the competition.
Let the future rest for the present, and let us stir up the past together.
The past? Which part of the past?
1940, you might remember it. May the 5th, 1940?
Yes, Dunkirk, I remember it well.
And does your paper remember it? You keep back copies, I presume?
Yes, all of our back issues are bound and kept.
May I have access?
They're kept in our archives, in a thermostatically controlled room. Is there anything special you want to look up?
Why, yes. It appears that Rundle had a hero. A certain Cooper Burns...
Yes, a famous man, known as Tiger Burns.
Quite a stirring story, I'm told, of how he sailed in his little boat not once, not twice, but three times to bring back stranded soldiers. And on his third attempt, he was killed, pulling men out of the surf. Where were you at the time?
I was on ARP duty at the Cross Meadow Hall.
Very cozy. But every man to his station in times of war... But now I hear that Rundle applauded her hero, draped his house in flags, had a service in the church, and here we come to the crunch, started a fund for his wife and dependents. It's that fund and the use it was put to that I would discover. Have you the facts?
Well, I'm rather vague, due to the excitement of the war.
Well, I am not vague, and perhaps your newspaper will help you to remember. Come, Sir Editor, with the inky fingers... Your past editions, if you please, from May 1940 onwards.
Ah, 1943. I've just remembered, they were the editions damaged by floodwater in the bad winter of 1947.
That was a convenient act of God.
Grievous.
Or of man. Come, come, I'm not falling for that. Let me see these additions, or by God, I'll wring your neck.
Mr. Haydock, you shall not pass.
Oh, I shall not pass, and what's to stop me? The A4 body of an ARP warden, I shall pass.
Scout, me help! Call the police! No, call a doctor!
Ah, so that's your game, eh? Call a doctor. Oh, no, you will not put me away again. You think you can get me so excited that I'll be put back in a dark dungeon of insanity? No, Mr. Editor. I shall keep my mind clear now. It has a purpose and design, and that design shall be carved with cold steel and a sharp pen. I'll gibbet you and find the truth. Back in circulation. Read all about it. Dead hero cries out for justice. This town, it had a hero. His name was Cooper Burns. He did act so heroic, and he asked no return.
He sailed across the channel, his duty for to do. But this town soiled his memory without much more ado. What happened to the fund for the defense of Cooper Burns? Please address all answers to the Rundle Gibbet. All answers, please. And not one answer comes. This is a silent town, wife.
Perhaps they want to forget the past. It's so long ago.
They sit on their secret like a bitch with a false pregnancy. I don't like the smell of it. I think I'll take a walk.
A walk? To where?
Why? To the jaws of hell and back.
Where are the jaws of hell today?
Where else but the Church of so-called England?
If you're going to the church, I'll come with you to say a silent prayer.
Stay where you are, woman. I'm not going for silent prayers. I'm going for silent curses.
Not in the church, Francis.
In memoriam, Sir William Tully, a true patriot. Lady Diana, beloved sister of Viscount Pumicestone, her kind works will live forever. Major Richard Brown Cartwright, no greater love hath man.
Ah, Francis, taking an interest in our tombs and monuments? Not a sign of gloom, I hope. Melancholy.
No, more a sign of wonder and dismay. Look at these plaques and monuments. All to the glory of the masters of the Pelt Valley from time immemorial.
The church has always been the first place to preserve the memory of its dead.
It's influential, dead vicar. Where are the peasants among these, the toilers, the unknown workers?
They've each found their place, no matter how humble.
Then what about the unheralded heroes?
Of whom are you speaking?
I'm speaking of Cooper Burns.
I seem to have heard that name before.
Seem to have heard the name? Shame on you and shame on Rundle. The name should ring out in honor above all others. Cooper Burns, local man. Single-handed sailed over to the beaches of Dunkirk and was first to rescue the stranded soldier. He sailed again, and this time he went close in under heavy enemy fire. On the third time, his boat was shelled, and he was blown to pieces. The town honored his name and promised to care for his wife and children. A fund was started, and through the generosity and gratitude of the townsfolk reached the sum of £5,000, of which his family got not one jot. Now his soul cries out for justice. Where is that money? Where is that honour? Where is your plaque, Reverend Lockie, to our hero of Dunkirk? Where is your monument to a wronged legend?
Well, as my youthful years might tell you, I hope, Dunkirk was long before my time.
Then in whose time was it?
Why, in the time of, let me think, 1940, my predecessor, Canon Austin.
Then Canon Austin is in for a gibbeting.
I'm afraid Canon Austin is beyond all our judgments. He's been dead for many years.
Then he must have records.
Not of that nature.
No records of wronged heroes. Yet look at these tablets on your walls to the pillaging aristocracy and landowners of this great town.
If there are any records, you'll have to apply to the Bishop of the Diocese.
Hang the Bishop of the Diocese, I'll give it the whole Church of so-called England, which in my view isn't fit to call itself the Church of half of England, nor a quarter of England. Not even a tenth of England. It is the Church of Conspiracy England and Cover-Up England. Read all about it. Rundle Gibbet Special. A church about to topple. Why is the Rundle Church about to topple? I'll tell you why. Because it's a colossus of hypocrisy built on sand. It is top-heavy with monuments of marble, granite and brass to the so-called gentry of this parish, and not one tribute to its real hero, Cooper Burns.
Oh, dear, Francis, I hope you're not getting too excited again.
I think I am getting excited, Doctor, and I like that, because when I get excited, I get a clear vision, and my enemies become more tangible in shape.
where before was just a cloud of suppression, antagonism, barricade and blockade, now methinks I see shapes beginning to form and materialize. And when those shapes do reveal themselves, my God, I'll know my enemies and I'll gibbet them.
But you won't do much gibbeting if you've weakened yourself in the process. Now, come along. Tell me, what brought on this flush, and I may be able to prescribe something.
You can only prescribe justice, Doctor, to settle the fury that is consuming my soul.
Justice? But for whom?
For a forgotten man who for 30 years has been confined in asylums because of an outraged mind. Years of frustrated hopes and blighted promises drove him to distraction. And now he is in the nut house, protesting the truth to the insane compatriots of his world.
But who is the man? Do I know him?
If you've read my gibbet, you know of him. Cooper Burns, Jr., the son of Rundle's hero.
Well, interesting case, if your accusations are correct. Would you like me to visit him? Discover his case history?
Would you, Doctor? At last, a friend. A helpmate. After all the obstacles of the past, an ally.
Well, I can only consult the records and meet the man and talk to his doctors.
And the world will know that injustice brought about his broken mind. Thank you. Thank you. I'll be able to face the jeerers and scornful with fresh heart.
Here he is, our editor and his director.
That remark is only forgiven because it comes from behind the pumps.
You're a herald of misery, Francis. You ought to write about the present, the fun, the good things of life.
Are there any?
There's always a drop of fun in this pub. We've got the sponsored slim coming up. Then there's the day's outing to Ascot and the pram race round the pubs of Rundle. That's life.
Trivia, man, trivia, utter trivia. I'm talking about an injustice done on one of this town's heroes.
We were all heroes in the war. If this town knew of my exploits in the desert, they'd be giving me free beer.
But one man is still suffering.
Young Cooper Burns.
He is an old man now. Old in wit, lost in body, wrecked in soul by the crippling injustice of his life.
Well, I don't know about that. But old Fred there will be able to tell you. He knew Cooper Burns.
He knew him?
They went to school together.
Last! A clue, a breakthrough.
Hey, he drinks lager. He never talks unless he drinks.
I'll take one across.
Hey.
Have a drink. You don't know me, but I know you.
Of course I knows you. I knows everybody. And I'll tell you this. If you don't get that cricket pitch watered, there'll be trouble with the fast bowlers.
No, I'm not the groundsman. I'm the editor of the Rundle Gibbet.
I put an advert in your paper for a kitten last Christmas and not one reply.
No, not the deviser. I'm the gibbet.
We're all alike.
Now listen. Listen carefully. Think back. You were a friend of young Cooper Burns.
Cooper Burns? We lived in one another's pocket.
You went to school together.
Oh, when we was at school. Most of the time, us was up Prunewood nesting. Run Lillington Brook fishing.
And you were neighbours?
Lived next door one another in Danning Street. It is all pulled down now.
It is indeed pulled down now by our lunatic council. Oh, more of that anon. Yeah. Now to get back to young Cooper Burns. One question I must have answered. As a boy, was he mad?
Oh, harum scarum, us both was.
But was he mentally unbalanced?
You mean by national health standards?
Before they put him away in the asylum, was there any sign of mental trouble?
Mental trouble?
Mm.
Oh, God, no. He was as right as I was. Bit of a tear away, but there we are. So was his father. But country lads was in them days. Now there's nothing wrong with young Cooper except a bit of mischief. Mm. He was as happy as a lark and free as a wind. He was the only lad I knew who got a skylark's egg. And that takes patience and observation, not nuttiness.
Thank you, Fred. Thank you. So, they did drive him mad. That's all I wanted to know.
Ah, Dr. Parker.
Have you done your search?
I have studied the case history of Cooper Burns, yes.
And so have I, Doctor, so have I. Let's compare notes.
And now, for professional reasons, I obviously can't reveal complete case histories.
More secrecy, eh?
Oh, no, more privacy, shall we say.
Go on, then. Tell me half the story and let me deduce the other half.
That won't be necessary, no. Main fact is that young Cooper Burns suffered a brain hemorrhage at birth due to a precipitous delivery. There was a scarring of the brain tissue which resulted in recurring epileptic fits throughout his life. And, well, until at the onset of adolescence, he was no longer safe to be free and was, taken into care.
My God. Is that supposed to be a true medical statement? Let me tell you that I have been talking to an old school friend of his who only remembers him as a perfectly normal lad.
Mr. Haydock, it's a true fact of life that boys, like lovers, remember the best moments.
Very glib. But I'll gibbet you for this. If you're part of the conspiracy and cover-up, I'll gibbet you for this.
Mr. Haydock, you're at perfect liberty to make a fool of yourself, but try not to make sorrow and pain for others.
Randall Gibbet, read all about it. The conspiracy of silence in this town gets more and more compact, immovable, like a blockage in a dog.
Francis.
Just a minute, woman, I'm compiling. Like a blockage in a scavenging dog.
Francis.
Solicitors, professionals, mealy-mouthed businessmen, and now the doctors are joined forces to muffle the cry of the gibbet.
Francis, there was an urgent message.
On all sides, they are intent to repress me, this cartel of villainous infamy, these Rotarian roundtablers, conservatives, and hush it up at all costers.
Francis, it was a very urgent message from your printer.
Oh, yes. A goodly man.
He said he can't print the gibbet anymore. He said, don't send it to him. He can't print any more.
Can't print? The freedom of the press? Gone. So now the conspiracy is complete. They've muzzled and muffled me at last. They're strong. There's no doubt about that. Thorough. They'll drive us out of town next. You'll see that'll be their next step, drive us out of town.
I've always fancied Salisbury myself.
Oh, yes. Salisbury is a good place to retire your rebels and let them suck their gums. They've drawn my teeth, wife. I'm done. They've let me have my sport, and then they clip my claws. If I go to Salisbury, it'll be to fade away, that's all.
Don't talk like that, Francis. You've been a bit of a trial, but life has never been dull with you.
I'll be dull now. Dull and unprotesting. They've drawn the core of my spine, with which all men of spirit are blessed.
There's somebody at the door. Do you want to see them?
Only if it's the knacker's man or the white-coated man from the asylum.
Francis, a gentleman for you.
Mr. Francis Haydock?
The remnants of that man, sir? I'm broken. A shell. What is your mission? Another cut, another thrust.
Why, sir, I come to shake your hand.
What? And be damned for life by the cursed touch?
Oh, come, sir, my name is Barrett. I live in Australia, but I'm a Rundle man. I have an aunt who sends me the local papers these last 30 years, every week without fail. And now the Rundle gibbet. And I want to say, well done. Keep up the good work.
My God. How refreshing encouragement is to me after the constant slings and stones.
Now, I know you're interested in the Cooper Burns story, so I've brought a photostat copy of the edition of the Deviser for 1941. Now, you'll see from the photograph that a plaque was erected by the people of Rundle on Cooper Burns' house in Denning Street.
And Denning Street was later pulled down?
Yes. But what happened to the plaque?
The agents for the demolition would know that.
Yes, sir. And those agents were the valuers and surveyors, Faker and Mallet.
Dear God, are my enemies coming within my grip?
Oh, as I see it, get near the missing plaque, and you get near the missing fund.
Is there justice after all? There is. There must be.
Arm your servant, Justice. I have served thee with the pen. Now let me serve you with the sword to cut down your enemies.
Well, good luck, sir, and don't give up. I'm on my way now.
Thank you, Mr. Barrett. I think that the Rundle Gibbet is near to a hanging.
Mr. Faker. May I have a word in your ear, if you can get it up from the ground?
Have you something to be valued, Mr. Haydock?
Yes, a human soul. Can you value a human soul?
I really don't know what you're talking about, Mr. Haydock, and I can't waste time trying to work it out.
Then work this out, if you will. If a human soul can be contained in a body, can it be remembered on a plaque?
A plaque?
Aye, a plaque. Does that help a human soul, even though it be pulled down and buried in the rubble of Denning Street? Oh, yes, that stirs your eye. You have come by degrees more alert. There was a plaque to the memory of Cooper Burns in Denning Street, but when the property was pulled down, the plaque vanished. I want to know where it went to.
Really, Mr. Haydock, Denning Street was pulled down 30 years ago. The plaque will have long since been lost.
That plaque is not lost. I can hear it crying out to me to save it. It has life. It has the soul of Cooper Burns, and it's imploring me to rescue it. And by God, I will, if I have to tear your business apart with my bare hands.
There's no point in taking my business apart. Everything that was taken from Denning Street, all usable timbers, bricks, and movables, was handed over to the owner of the property for whom we acted.
And who was this owner?
Well, I would have thought anyone could deduce that for themselves. Mr. Selwyn D. Piggott. The family name is Denning Piggott.
Tantalizing is the chase, but sweet is the scent. Mr. Selwyn Denning Piggott, landowner and magistrate of this town. Well, Francis, I think you're going trespassing.
Haydock! Mr. Haydock, what are you doing here?
I'm doing as the birds are doing, going freely.
Why have you got those wire cutters?
Why else but to cut wire?
I'll have you arrested for this, Mr. Haydock.
I am only obeying your logic. You put up the barricades of war, so I bring the tools of war.
I have cattle in that field.
Tomorrow you shall have people. There was once a public right-of-way by the river until you wired it off. As there was once a thriving community in Denning Street until you pulled it down.
Denning Street was a slum.
You didn't mind people living in your slum while they paid their rent. You only evicted them and raised their homes and developed the land when it suited you.
They were all suitably rehoused. I worked closely with the council, and they were all put in much superior, modern, and more comfortable accommodation.
Out of town?
On the outskirts of town.
And what about their traditions, their memorials, their monuments?
There was only one monument in Denning Street. And that was to our glorious dead of World War I, which was rehoused in the park.
Very satisfactory. Nothing else?
There was nothing else in Denning Street.
There was one other thing. A brass plaque to Cooper Burns. That isn't in the park, it isn't in the abbey, but I know it is in this town, and it is restless to see the light of day. I know you have it. Where is it?
The plaque to Cooper Burns. Yes, I know it.
Ah.
But I don't have it.
Then where was it taken?
By the time we demolished Denning Street in 1953, nobody wanted to know about Cooper Burns or his plaque. I offered it to the British Legion. They didn't want it because he wasn't a member. I offered it to the Working Men's Club. But they didn't want it because he'd been banned for overturning a snooker table. I offered it to the vicar. But he didn't think it justified a place because of Cooper's background. At last it was taken. By the man who was chairman of the Cooper Burns Trust.
Yes, yes, his name.
Really, Mr. Haydock, it's true you have more fight and fury than plodding research. I thought you would have discovered that, first of all. The chairman of the Cooper Burns Trust was no other than the Lord of the Manor, Brigadier General Lord Vincent.
Oh, my God. May the heavens stand still in front of this fool. The biggest force in Rundle, and I have not seen it. My enemy was so big that I never considered him. But I have been fighting dwarves. The giant was invisible. Those swipes I took at his puppets blinded me to his control. Why, my Lord Vincent, You are a worthy enemy. It will be a delight to climb your walls and knock at the bastion of your power.
Mr. Haydock, I have been expecting you.
My lord, I think you have. There is no point in keeping pigeons unless they carry messages.
Mm-hmm. You've come to do battle, I see.
I have, my lord.
Well, seconds out. We're both seasoned campaigners, and I take it you won't shrink from the first blow.
I will not, my lord.
You're a fearless man.
My sense of outrage at an injustice, a conspiracy, makes a fool of fear.
Outline this supposed injustice to me, sir.
Don't sir me. I'm above these tricks of rank. I want none of your titles. Neither mate, buddy, or old chap.
I thought sir was suitable.
If sir is suitable for me, what does that make of lord for you? No. Mr. Haydock is suitable for me.
At the end of the day, let us hope that Francis is suitable. Now, this injustice you speak of.
The injustice is that this town had a neglected hero called Cooper Burns.
This town also had a villain Cooper Burns, a poacher Cooper Burns, a rover and senseless harum-scarum Cooper Burns.
Beware what you say. I know the man.
Know the man. I knew the man. I also loved the man and hated the man. I fought the man and embraced the man. Don't talk to me of knowing Cooper Burns. He and I were locked in tussles and friendships till the very end.
Friendships? You, his lord?
My position never overawed Cooper Burns. My gamekeepers never frightened him. And my walls never kept him out. I remember the first time we met. One night I saw a flash of light in my pheasant coppice. And I went down to investigate and found Cooper poaching. I challenged him, saying, "This is my land." And he returned the challenge, saying, "Wherever I'm standing is my land till I choose to get off it. If you want it, you'll have to fight for it." Some folly or sense of fair play made me take off my jacket to him. I'd boxed for Eton. God knows where his training school had been, but it took me half an hour to fathom his style and give him a clip. I scored with a knockout, and he scored with two black eyes, a broken nose, and a sprained wrist. We shared my hip flask, and an uneasy alliance began. He was a great companion, but a rogue and unpredictable ne'er-do-well.
But this ne'er-do-well was the man who took his boat to Dunkirk.
Cooper never had a boat to take to Dunkirk. He stole one from the moorings on the Pelt Sands. It was only because of his reckless heroism that detail was suppressed.
So you raised a plaque in Denning Street, and it was lost without trace?
Not lost without trace. Preserved.
In your vaults?
No, I have my own museum of Hampshire War and Peace.
Private, of course.
Not for long. I'm opening my house to the public before I die. Come, let me give you a preview. There. Simple, but we thought appropriate.
To Cooper Burns. Erected by his fellow citizens of Rundle as a recognition to the heroism he showed, snatching soldiers of the British Expeditionary Force from the threat of the enemy at Dunkirk.
Does that satisfy you?
I'd be more satisfied if I knew what happened to the money from the fund his fellow citizens donated for the support of his family.
For that, we must make a little journey. My car's outside, waiting.
And where is it taking us?
Not far, just a little haven within the town.
Do I know it?
You do. The Paulina Cadderley Home for the Aged.
Ah, yes. That monument to your wife's charitable life.
Working life, Mr. Haydock. Please be fair to her memory, no matter what you think of me.
The idleness of the rich often brings on paroxysms of charitable effort in middle age.
Be gracious, Mr. Haydock. Be gracious.
I can't afford to be.
It's a quality that sits equally well on the poor as well as the rich. I have a lady you must meet. Mrs. Ipomea Cooper Burns.
Good day, my lord.
Ipomea, this is Mr. Francis Haydock.
Yes, I thought you'd find me out, young man.
You are the wife of Cooper Burns.
I am, yes. And I've heard about you and all the trouble you've been causing in town.
For you? Against this power lobby?
Don't address your betters like that, young man.
You're in cohorts with this lot.
I was in the service of Lord Vincent and Lady Pauline for many years.
And a good friend for many years more.
Yes. Lady Pauline and I were close.
As close as a servant and lady can be.
Don't slight this lady with your ignorance.
He's impulsive. No. You see, young man, I had a son who had severe mental trouble from birth. Lady Pauline was a great strength and friend.
But the mental trouble was surely aggravated by the outraged sense of justice that he was robbed of the Cooper Burns Charity Fund.
No, that was beyond his understanding. It was just something he'd heard and it pleased him to repeat. Enough of the fund was invested to keep him comfortably for life.
Hmm. And the rest?
You are among it. Lady Pauline and I built this home for the elderly and needy of Rundle.
But only her name appears on it. Wasn't yours good enough?
I think this man would know everything, my lord.
No, Ipomir. There's no need.
There is urgent need.
Then I shall tell you.
If you breathe or print a word of it, Haydock, I'll gibbet you personally.
Warring words, my lord.
It was you who sought the thick of battle. Go on, Ipomir, if you must.
It was in the 30s that Cooper and I came to Rundle. We were not Hampshire people. We came from Dorset, near Piddlington, which was then a very secluded place. We walked all the way, even though I was bearing a child. We were running away, hoping to start afresh. But there was no fresh start for us. The past caught us up. You see, Cooper and I passed as man and wife, but we were brother and sister. The punishment for our crime were carried inside me, in our own son. When it was obvious how we were going to turn out, it seemed to drive Cooper to do desperate things. Drinking, fighting, gambling, poaching. The reckless life was the only thing that seemed to ease his tormented mind. He would have joined the army and hurled himself into the war, but he was then too old. So, when Dunkirk came, he did his great deed. It was the finest defiant fling of his life. When the great acclaim took place and we were honored, the last thing I wanted was to advertise our name. I was no longer proud of it. I wanted the fuss to die down as quickly as possible, and I told my lord here the whole story. With his help, Cooper was honored quietly, and the whole episode buried. Until you come along, there was no conspiracy of silence, except at my request.
So, would you gibbet us now, Mr. Haydock?
No, my lord. The rope I prepared for the neck of others I shall use to gag myself.
In The Rundle Gibbet by Peter Terson, Hayden Jones played Francis and June Barry, his wife. Faker was played by Christian Rodsker, the editor by Brian Haynes, Albert and the vicar by John Abineri, Felix and Dr. Parker by Rex Holdsworth, the nurse by Rosalind Adams, Miss Bailey by Julia Hills, the psychiatrist and Fred by Geoffrey Matthews, Barrett and Cooper by Bruce Stewart, the magistrate by William Fox, The Dentist and the Bailiff by Andrew Hilton, Ibrahimir by Daphne Hurd, and Lord Vincent by Jack Watson. The members of the ladies' darts team were Vera, Christine Pollen, Nora, Rosalind Adams, and Agnes, Angela Phillips. The Rundle Gibbet was directed in Bristol by Sean McLaughlin.